Begin the current daf in Sechz Bam Metzia daf Ayin Beis. Begin on the third line down by the top of the Yamad. The Gemara continues with the related discussion of the previous daf. One of the halachas mentioned in our previous Mishnah was regarding the permissibility of lending and borrowing a ribis regards to a non-Jew. Additionally, even we said there are cases when a Jew could give another Jew money on interest if it's the non-Jew's money and it's based on the consent of the non-Jew. So the Gemara continues related to this halacha of how ribis manifests itself when it's regards to a non-Jew. So, Tarban Lunna Braisa. Yisrael Shalava Mois Min Hanachi Beribis. Regarding a Jew who borrowed money from a non-Jew on interest, which is permissible, the Isra of Ribis is only with two Jews. But Vizikaf and Alav Bemilva. Then, during that time period, at a later point in time, when they calculated how much the loan was for $100, then there was a certain level of interest going up, 5% per year, then they calculated to say, now you owe me $150. So they said, okay, let's wrap this up. I'm not going to do any more with this interest. You owe me $150. They wrote up a new document. Now you owe me $150. Now, then Vinizgayer, then he converted. This non-Jew, the lender, became a Jew. So it says the Braisa, it depends when he converted regards what's the ramifications now regarding this loan that was on interest. Im kaidim shenizgayer is a covenant of b'milva, if, like we just described it, but before he converted, he had already transferred and transformed that interest loan into a new loan. It's what you owe me now. You owe me that principal plus the interest. No more interest now. You owe me now $150. Then says the Braisa, Gevis a Keren v'Gevis a Ribis. Then that convert, the Ger, will be allowed to collect the principal and the interest, because from the moment that he transferred it into a loan, it was like it was already collected that interest. And now it's just a debt that's owed to him. But Vim La'achar Shin Hizgayer is a covenant of B'milva, if only after he converted, that's when they transferred the interest. Now he can't have an interest loan anymore, so they transferred it into a regular loan, but it was only after he converted. Then says the Braisa Gevis Akaren Ve'ina Gevis Aribis. Then they could only collect the principal and not the interest again, because that collection is a collection of ribis, where now that he's Jewish, he's not allowed to collect a loan on interest from another Jew. Therefore, it's only if he had transferred it into in this outstanding debt unto a loan only before he became Jewish. Chayin, same thing as the other way. Nachri shalav amois mi Yisrael beribis. If a non-Jew borrowed from the Jewish lender when he was a non-Jew on interest, was a coffin love b'milva. Then at a later point in time, the Jew says, "You know what? It's okay. You owe me so much money already. Let's just forget about the interest. Let's write up a new document. You owe me this amount of money." And then v'nizgayer. Then the non-Jew converted and became Jewish. Now, imach le'nizgayer is a coffin love b'milva. If, like we just said, that if before the conversion was, they had already transferred into a loan, into a new debt, then gave us a keren, then gave us a ribis. Then the Jew could collect both the principal and the interest, because it was transferred already into a new debt before it became Jewish. But if it's only that it was transferred into a loan after the borrower had already became Jewish, then then he could only collect the principal and not the ribis, because although he had lent it to him when he was non-Jewish, but now when he's going to come to collect, he's already a Jew and he cannot collect interest on the loan, and therefore now he cannot collect any more the ribis. Now, Yesi Aimer, he disputes this last point. He says, Nachri shalava mois mi Yisrael beribis, regarding this case when the non-Jew borrows money from a Jew on interest. So he says, Benkach u Benkach. He says, in either way, meaning regard to the last way we described it, as the Gemara Sholei can explain the reason for Abiyasi's halacha, that Gevis Akerim ve Gevis Aribis. No, even though now that he's a Jew, the lender, the Jewish lender, could collect from this newly converted Jewish borrower both the principal and the interest that he had loaned him when he was a non-Jew. And Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chizda, Amar Rav Huna. Halacha Rabbi Yosi, halacha follows Rabbi Yosi that the Jewish lender could always collect, no matter when it transferred into a loan was with the non-Jew that converted, he could always collect the ribis. So Amar Rava, my time and Rabbi Yosi, what's the reason of Rabbi Yosi? Similarly, the Tanakam is correct, where now that he's Jewish, you cannot collect the loan that was given on interest. And that says the Gemara, Kadei Shlo Yemish, that people shouldn't say, Bishvul Ma'is of Nizkayerzeh, that there'll be a reyesa in his whole conversion. They're going to say, oh, he converted just because financial reasons. Because here he owed this Jewish person thousands and thousands of dollars of interest. Now he says, hey, I'll become Jewish, and then he can't collect from me anymore because you can't collect interest from a Jew. So therefore, to avoid that, the Chacham said, no, he could collect from him, where monetary law, the rabbis have the rights to, in Hefker, Bez, and Hefker, they said that he could collect from the convert the interest so that people shouldn't suspect and say the whole reason why he converted was just to save the money. Tanabon went in a braisa. Continuing on this topic about the halachas of ribis, shtar shekasav by ribis, a document that was written on it, an element of interest, where it says that this guy borrowed from this guy a mana on ribis, this amount of money, and that he has to pay up at that certain amount of time. Where a document that the loan was on interest. So says the first opinion, so we penalize him, the lender. Meir says, not only could he not collect the interest, where that's biblically forbidden, but he can't even collect the principal, what he actually loaned to the borrower. He can't even collect that. They disagree. They say, no, you could collect the principal. That's what you loaned them. That's permissible. But the interest, which is forbidden, that you cannot collect. So I asked about my commentary regarding what are they disagreeing about. So the Gemara explains, Remeir Sava, he holds, Kansin and Heter Mishamisura. We penalize what is permitted because of what was done forbidden. Rabbanan Sava, like Kansin Heter Mishamisura, say we don't penalize what's permitted because of what's forbidden. What you did wrong, you're not allowed to collect. But what you did right, which is lending another Jewish person, which is actually a mitzvah, that we permitted you to collect from. That's their machlekes. Similarly, the Gemara brings, it's Nan Hasam. Learned over there in the Mishnah Masech the Shviyas, that says, Shtari Chayv HaMogdamin. Predated documents of a loan, so let's say the loan was on a certain day, but actually it was written that the loan, they predated it, they wrote it before the loan happened, a few days before. So the date written on the document of the loan was actually a few days before the actual loan. So says the Mishnah, Psulin. So now the document is invalid. The reason for that is because what happens is that part of what the purpose of a document in a loan is that the lender has a shibud, that all the assets of the borrower are indebted to him. If then at a later point in time, the borrower defaults and his properties could be collected from, if after the loan date he had sold it off to someone else, that he already had a shibud on, he already had a lien on that, the guy who bought it, you can go and collect from what's called those lekuches. Now the problem with a predated document is that you're going to collect from those lekuches, people that had purchased, possibly from even before the loan, because the date of the loan was written 30 days before. But actually, it was only 30 days after that date. Now, in between those 30 days, people might have bought fields because there were no liens on it. But the document says that there was a lien. So because that's falsehood, that's a lie, it really wasn't written 30 days before. So it's invalid, and you cannot collect from the chasim and shabadim, even those which were written after the date of the act, meaning even those that were actually after the actual date of the loan, since it's written incorrectly, it's written 30 days earlier, and it might cause a collection of incorrect fields from the kuchas, therefore there's no collection anymore from the sadis, from the nechasim mishabadim. But vamocharin kasherin, says the Mishnah, but a post-dated document, meaning if the loan was on the first of the month and it was only written the 15th of the month, so then it's written later, so then kasherin, that's kasher because that's not causing a loss to anybody and it's just that the lender could only collect from a later point in time, so therefore it's going to be kasher. So that the Gemara's question was, Mokdam Mamai Pesulim, why are these predated documents invalid? Asked the Gemara in the Hidale Gavum Isman Rishon, I understand why you cannot collect from the first date, meaning the date that was written in the document, because that's the incorrect date. The loan didn't happen then. There was no Sheba then, and you can't collect from the Lekuchas at the point in time. But Nigvum Isman Sheni, but let them at least collect from the second date, meaning when the loan actually happened, that from that point onward, they were shibudim, and therefore anyone that bought after that should be allowed to be collected from as nechasim shibudim. So why can you not collect from any nechasim shibudim, even which is after the actual date of the loan? So Rav Shmuel, she says, b'machlekes shinuya. You're right, this halach and this mishnah Masechta Shviyos was contingent on a machlekes, on a disagreement. V'remeir, it's going like Remeir that we just mentioned before, that he penalizes what's permitted because of what's forbidden. Meaning, there's something wrong in this document. What's wrong? It's written earlier. So although, at least from the date when the loan did happen, there should be allowed to be collected, because that's the heter, but we penalize that because it was done forbidden, just like we quoted him before, where when there's a shtar on ribis, not only do we not collect the ribis, but even what you should be allowed, which is the principal, that also we penalize. That's one approach. Rabbi Yechonam, he says, no, afil tim rabbanon. You could say that the Tan of the Mishnah Masechta the Shviyos is even like the rabbanon, who generally do not penalize heter because of iser. But gezeirah shemayigva mizman rishon. It's a decree, it's a rabbinic concern that maybe the lender will collect from the first date, meaning the date that was written, and which is before the actual date of the loan. The reason for that is because there are some consumers that are not meticulous and precise to realize, to tell the lender to say, wait a second, your document was predated, and my purchasing was before your loan. there are those that are not going to be aware of that, and therefore the lender will take advantage of those consumers and say, "Here, look at the date." They go, "Okay, it says the date. Fine. What am I going to do about it? Here, take my field." But really, that's incorrect. So you're right. According to Rabbanan, you would be allowed to collect from the second date. But we don't let you collect from anything because you might then come to collect from the earlier predated time, and therefore you can't collect at all. Now, the Gemara brings a story related to this halacha. Tahu gavra demashkin le pardes lechavi. There was a certain person that had taken a loan from a lender, and he used his vineyard to give to the lender as collateral to hold on to. Now, achle tlashnei, one of the halachas is that there are certain situations where the lender could consume and utilize that field of collateral, whether through deduction, different ways, and the lender was using that field, which he was holding on to as a collateral. He was eating the produce of that field for 3 years. Now, after the 3 years, amalei, the lender said to the borrower, he says, "Imazavnis lo nahali mutav. If you sell me this field, I'm really getting used to your field. I really like it. If you sell it to me, then fine. Ve'i loy, but if you don't sell it to me, I'm going to make things bad for you. Kivishna lo l'shtar meshkanto. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of this document that says that the field that I have of yours is just collateral. Now, vamino, then what I'm going to say is, l'kuchi hibiyadi. I'm going to tell everybody that this field I had bought, and I just lost the document that was the deed that documented that it was sold to me. Now, how is that going to work for me then? If I don't have a document to say that I bought it, how's it going to help? Because there is a halacha that the beginning of Bava Basra starts off with this concept of what's called Cheskes Gimel Shanim, which is a person's not expected to hold on to his documents forever. You got to hold on to it at a certain point in time because the guy might contend. But if a person has been eating the payers of a field for 3 years, it's a chazakah, it's a presumption which tells us that this is his field because why didn't the real owner come and contend with him for these 3 years? So therefore he says to him, he says, look, I want this field. You want to sell it to me? Fine. If not, I'm going to then just make believe that it's mine and you're not going to be able to get it back from me anyway. So what the owner of the vineyard did, he preempted his lender. What he did was he got up and he acquired through witnesses as a gift this vineyard that the lender wanted to do this scam on him. He acquired it lebnei katan. He gave it over as a present to his minor son. Now the reason why he did this was because ultimately, as we're going to see, he was going to follow through with the blackmail and sell the field to the lender. Now, but he didn't want it to be a legitimate, valid sale. So what he did was is that he's going to write up a document, sell it to this lender. Now, when this lender comes to produce the document in court and say, "Hey, look, this is my field," he's going to bring out at a later point in time, because he didn't tell this part to the lender, he's going to bring out the document that he had gifted it to his son beforehand, saying, "Hey, I know I sold it to you, but who am I? I didn't own it at that point in time. I had already gifted it to my minor son, and therefore, what do you want from me?" And then he's not going to be able to come anymore from the Cheskes Gimel Shanim because he's coming from the Shtar Mechira, and you say your Shtar Mechira is void, is invalid, because I didn't own it at the time I had gifted it to my son. So he first gifted it to his minor son, and then he sold it to that lender. So says the Gemara as follows. Zvini vadi lahavizmini. So this borrower was very intelligent, very smart. He got out of this situation. It definitely wasn't the sale because he didn't own it at the time. He had already acquired it to his minor son. But the question, and that's what relates to the previous Gemara's discussion, is Zuzi. The money that now the lender is claiming by the borrower, who he's producing the document to say, "Hey, you sold me a vineyard that wasn't yours. I realize now you got me better than I was trying to get you." Now the problem is, but you sold me the field and you took money from me and you wrote in the document that you're taking responsibility for anything that happens to the field. So the question now is, he's saying, "Hey, I want my money back. You scammed me." Now, but let's say that this borrower doesn't have any money. He already used up that money. So kamilva b'shtar damu, do we say that the loan that was made is like a loan that's documented in a document? And the reason for that is because he wrote on the shtar mechira that he's selling to him with achrayis. So when the seller sells him something, it's a debt that's owed, because it ultimately turns out it was actually a loan, because actually no sale was happening. So since he took responsibility, so for that point in time of the loan, that creates a shibud on all his nechasim, and therefore the lender should be allowed to collect from his nechasim mishabadim. As the Gemara says, if he gave nechasim mishabadim, he could collect from his assets that were already sold off to other people. Or maybe, says the Gemara, kimilval pedom, or maybe we compare it actually as an oral loan. And he cannot collect from his encumbered properties. The reason for that is because this wasn't a document. What happened was, essentially what it was is that when he sold to the lender the field, it really wasn't a sale because it wasn't his field. So he's taking a loan. Taking a loan, moreover, it's not just a loan. There's a loan that was written in the document where he took responsibility for the field. and ultimate responsibility because he didn't even sell him anything. It was one big sham. So he had to get his money back from him. He took responsibility. So you have a document with achrayis, a loan that's written in a document, creates achrayis nechasim, and if he collects from his nechasim mishabadim. Or do we say that, no, that's only by a valid document. Here it wasn't a valid document because there was no sale here. Or it was one big hocus pocus. So therefore, it was an oral loan, but there was no loan written in the document because it wasn't a valid document. That was the Gemara's question. Tama Abaye said, Valav Haina Drabasi, isn't this exactly what Drabasi had said? Tama Abasi said, as a continue on the base, he says, Maidi Bishtar Shekasavri, that once the borrower admits regarding a document of a debt which was produced against him, and the borrower says, this is a true document, he agrees that it was written. So Rabasi said that Eina Tarech Lekaimai. Then from that point on, the lender does not have to go and try to find witnesses who were signed in the document to testify regarding their signatures to validate and verify that this is a true document, because the bar already admitted that it's a true document. And therefore, v'gevim l'chasim mishabadim. So therefore, once we know the validity of the document of being truthful, now it's a true document. And now the lender could collect not only from the bar himself, but even from his incumbent properties. So therefore, what Abai is saying is the same thing applies here too. That since the borrower, in this case, who was selling, in quotes, his field to the lender, he admits that he sold it to him with responsibility. Now, but it was a sham, but he had to do it because the guy was trying to get him. But he admits that he did sell it. In other words, that he took a loan, that he owes him that money. And if the document would be invalid regarding the sale, because, yes, he had already gifted it to his minor son, but that doesn't make it void regarding the responsibility, because it's just like the case over there where the borrower admits to his responsibility, to his liability, that was written in the document, then you collect from the Chasam Mishabad. Here also, he's admitting to his liability, which is that he sold it to him with Achrayas, and therefore you should be allowed to collect, says Abaye, from the Chasam Mishabad. Even though the document is not valid regarding the actual sale, but regarding his Achrayas, it's valid. That Amalei Rava says to Abaye, me dummy, can you compare our case to the case of Rabasi? Hasam nitinli kasim. In Rabasi's case, that document was given to be written. In other words, it's a regular loan that they had over there, and Lev is admitting that he owes the money. So yes, since it's a permissible document and he's admitting to it, so then we go with his word and we verify it, and then the lender could collect from the chasam shabadim. Hacha says, Ravel leinitinli kasev. In our case over here, since he had already gifted the kerem to his son as a gift, therefore it was just because he was feeling coerced that he wrote the whole document. But therefore, what Rav is saying is that actually it should not help even for the responsibility of Achrayas, because the whole document from its inception was not given to be written because it was one big farce. From its inception, and therefore you can't compare it to that halacha of Rabasi, and therefore it says Rav, it could be that in our case it would be different, and you would not be able to collect from the Chasam Mishabadim. It wouldn't be considered as a document whatsoever, even in regards to Achrayis. Now, Yasim Mereim v'kamar l'hashmaita. Now, Mereim was sitting, and he was saying over this statement from Rav that he disagreed with Abaye, and he held that, no, over here in this case, it's not like it's written in the document, even for the Achrayis, and you would not be able to collect from the Chasam Mishabadim. Now, Amalei Ravina l'Ameima, when Ravina heard this, he said to Mereimer, says, wait a second. Elohadam Rabbi Yechanan, and then this that we had quoted previously, the teaching of Rabbi Yechanan that said that the psul of a shtar muktam, and explained to that Mishnah Masechet Shviyas. That's why we introduced this whole story to get to this part that relates back to the previous Gemara's discussion, where he said that a predated document is invalid, said Rabbi Yechanan, that's even like Rabbanan. Why? So why is it possible? Why can you not collect even after the date of the actual loan? Is Gzeirah Shem Yigvah Mizman Rishon, because it's a decree, it's a rabbinic concern that he might come to collect even from the first date, meaning the predated date, which is false. and therefore we don't let him collect from any nechazim shabbatim. On that asks Mirei Murter Avino, according to Rava, Neima loy nitin likasev. What do you mean? Why did Rabbi Yochanan have to come up with a whole new interpretation why it's going to be possible a shtar muktam? Because rabbinic concern that you might come to collect from earlier date, just say very simply. Say, like Rava said, because you're not allowed to write such a... It was never given to be written. Why is not given to be written? Because you're writing a wrong date, an earlier date. You're not as allowed to write such a date. Rather, says Ravina to Mereimer, obviously what you hear from Rabbi Yochanan is that we do not invalidate a document for that reason because it wasn't written l'kasim. You see that if just that reason, that according to Rabbi Yochanan, you would be allowed to collect. He has to come up with a new reason of Shalei Yigvim, that we're concerned of Shemi Yigvim Mizman Rishon. But seemingly you see, not like Rava, because according to Rava, you don't have to come up with a new reason, just say because it wasn't Nitin Likasiv. So Malay, so Marema answered to Ravina, he says, no, Hachi Hashta, can you compare the two? Hasam, over there by Shtar Muktim, Nehidele Nitin Likasiv Mizman Rishon, although that it's not given to be written from the earlier predated date, of Nitin Likasim is Mancheni, but that document for that debt was given to be written from the second date, meaning from the actual date alone. So the actual text of the document was given to be written, just not from the earlier date, but from a later date. But Hachal Nitin Likasim Klal, here by the vineyard, it's not given to be written at all because it's no sale, whatever, it was just one big farce. And for that reason, says Meremer, Ravina's approach still stands. It could be that it wouldn't be considered Shtar at all, even in regards to Achrayis Nechasim, because it's never supposed to be written, this document. It was just a way of fooling the guy who tried fooling him. But the Gemara continues asking, Eloha de Tanya, but then this day we learn the Braisa, which at the beginning of that Braisa says, Halacha that's mentioned many times in Shas, that one is not allowed to collect for the consumption of payris or for the betterment of a land from, to collect it from the Chasim Shabbatim for Tikkun Olam. Now on that the Braisa explains what is this case that because of Tikkun Olam, so that the world should function and that shouldn't stop all commerce, what is the case, L'shvach Karkoy's case? So what does that mean when someone makes his land better, then he wants to collect from the Chasim Shabbatim that he cannot? So he explains the Braisa as follows. Harisha Gozel Sodom Mechaver. Somebody robs a field from his friend, and then he sells it to somebody else. And unbeknownst to him, it's a stolen field. And v'hishbicha, he betters the field, he fertilizes, does all these types of things. And then then suddenly it's being taken away from his hand, meaning from the consumer, because the victim, who really owns the field, takes him to court, says, what are you doing with my field? This is my field. He sold it to you. Who is this guy? He's a gazlan. So, says the Braisa, kishu gaivo, now when the lekach wants to go ahead and get his money back from the guy who sold it to him, who was a gazlan, So the principle of what he paid for the land itself, that he could collect from the incumbent properties of his seller. Meaning, if the date of the sale was 3 months ago when he bought it, then a month after that, someone else purchased one of the properties of this seller who was his gazlan. Now this one who had bought the field, who wants to go get his money back, could collect the principal from those other consumers who came after him. And the reason being is because the document had written that the seller was selling it to him with responsibility, which that predated the sale of those other lekuches. So he could collect that from the Chasim Shabbatim. But, which the primary point that the Braisa wants to point out, v'shvach, but regarding what he made the field better, which he bought the property for $100, but then he invested $50 into the field. That shvach gave him the chasim b'necher, and that he could only collect from the available properties that are still by his seller, but not from the chasim b'shabodim. And that's what the Braisa is saying. That's because of tikkun olam. What's a tikkun olam? Because consumers, to have commerce, that someone should buy from someone else's properties, they want to be able to make sure that they're okay, that they're not purchasing something with a lien. Now, a lekeach, a consumer, cannot be careful in something that has no limit. For example, if there would be liability for the increase of a property that was bought, or the payers that are derivatives from that field, that you don't know, that's endless. How could you ever buy from someone? Maybe that lien that someone has on him for $100 is going to turn into $1,000 because he might make shvach and payers. You don't know. You can't be careful, as it's going to stop all commerce. Regarding the principle, that they can be careful because they know that, okay, I know this guy sold a field for $1,000. I know that how much that guy has a lien on the field. I'll be able to make sure that I'm not going to buy beyond lower than the $1,000 property that he's left. As long as he has that left, they won't come and collect from me. And if he's not careful, so then he's creating a loss for himself. But for the payers and the shvach, that's something that's you can't track that, and therefore that cannot be collected from the Chasim Shabbat. That's what the Braisa says. And that asks the Gemara again on Rava. But Neima Loi Nitin, you should say that this document of the sale was not given over Likasev to be written. In other words, this sale that this guy bought the field from this seller, what did he buy? He bought a stolen field. That means to say, essentially, that was one big farce. The document was void, and so too the responsibility and the liability that the seller took was void because it wasn't even the sale of anything. It's one big scam. So then the question becomes, according to Rava, why is the consumer allowed to go ahead and collect the keren from the chasam shabadim? You shouldn't be able to collect anything. It's an oral loan, an oral document. It was oral. It was no document over here. According to Rava, he says, like, it's, if it's not a document, it's not a document, then you shouldn't be able to collect even the keren from the chasam shabadim. Why does the Braisa say only peris and shvach you cannot collect? So the Gemara says, again, differentiating, and says, Hachi Hashtik, can you compare the two? And this is, we had three different cases where we said that to fine-tune and explain, what do we mean when we say loinit and lekasev? It's where it's totally loinit and lekasev. And here also, it's not comparable. Hasim over there in the stolen field, ilamando amma, whether according to the opinion which this discussion was brought in the first paragraph of Tezvam Abayz, that nichalei de loinikaria gazlanam. A person who sells a stolen field to his friend, ultimately he feels stupid. He doesn't want to be called that he was a gazlan, that he's selling stolen stuff. So he goes to the first guy who he sold his field, and he tries to buy it from him so that he could substantiate the sale that he made to this other person, so that people shouldn't call him a gazlan. Or ilaman da amar nichilei deleikam be'menuse, or according to the other opinion mentioned over there in the first paragraph, that it's for a different reason, similar, where he just wants to be considered trustworthy. So either way, mefais le'lamari, like we explained over there, he's going to appease the original owners, and he's going to buy it from him to say, you know what, I just want to make sure the guy I sold it to, even though it was one big scam, let it be a sale. I don't want to be untrustworthy. I don't want people to call me a gazlan, a robber. So umukim le'lishtari. So he's going to substantiate the document. You're right, originally this document was not given to be written, but on some level it was. Why? Because although at the time that he sold it, it wasn't even his, but he will ultimately go and try to make it work out. He's going to go to the original owner and buy it, and so therefore what he sold should be sold. Whereas Hachob here by the vineyard, lavruchi minek mechaven. What's the whole purpose that this guy who's selling his vineyard to that person trying to do? He's trying to actually avoid the actual sale. That's why he went and he first acquired it to his minor son to run away from it. Shtar Mekayim Leh, so what, now he's going to go ahead and substantiate the document? He does not intend to have it go to their seller whatsoever. So therefore, what Rava was saying is it's not Likasev at all. And therefore, that's what Rava was saying to Abaye. It could be that this will not be a document, not only for the sale, which obviously it wasn't, but even regards to collecting from the Chasam Shabbatim, it's not a document at all. It's only an oral loan, and therefore would only be allowed to collect from the Chasam B'nei Chayrin, from the guy who, quote, sold it to him, but not from his Chasam Shabbatim, because it was not given over to be written at all. And regards to the other cases where, on some level, they were given to be written, and that's why it would be allowed to be collected from the Chasam Shabbatim. The Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, regarding the halachas of ribis, how they pertain to commerce, to business, in contrast to a direct loan, which that's the ribis d'oraisa, called ribis ketzutza, prearranged interest. Here the Mishnah continues with halachas of mekach memcha. So the Mishnah says that ein poiskin ala peiris. This is a concept we've mentioned before, what's called pisuk. You're not allowed to do pisuk on produce, meaning to give money right now for a certain amount of wheat, and you tell them, look, I'm going to pay it for you up front, and you'll give me the produce at a later point in time. That's moreover, even if right now there are those who give the produce right now, which in the beginning of the reaping season, but that's not yet considered the actual substantiated season, that the market has not been established yet. Now, the reason why pisuk is forbidden is because the prices might go up in the interim, and essentially, on some level, the seller is on some level like a borrower of money, because he's getting the money now and he gets to use the money and he's not giving anything back to the buyer at this point in time. Now, at a later point in time, when he gives him the produce, he's giving him more expensive than what it was contracted for originally, because the price goes up at that point in time. So that could be seen as the more expensive that he's giving him back, as if it's interest on the loan that he had from the buyer. The buyer was like his lender because he had the money, and therefore rabbinically they say that you know, I'll do pisuk because it resembles interest. or at least it could be if the prices go up in the meantime until he gives him the product that he's giving to him. Ah, Chiyatza Ashar, says the Mishnah, but that's only problematic until the market value has been established and is public and everyone knows in the marketplace that's how much it goes for, because then at that point in time, it's something that's available for everybody. And as we'll see in the Mishnah, it parallels the halacha of what's called Yeshloi, which as long as there's an availability for the product, we view it as if it's already by the consumer. So although it's not only delivered till a later point in time, and that point in time it could have gone up, but it's considered as if it went up in the domain of the buyer already, because we view it as his already. Since it's able to be gotten, so then that's why we say that it's as if the seller bought it with the money that he got, and as if it's already by the buyer. Now, so continues the Mishnah. Yatza Hashar Paiskin. So what's the understanding of this logic of if the market value has already been established, then you can do this halach of pisuk where the guy pays up front and only gets the product at a later point in time. But isn't that possibly going to be more than what he gave, bordering on ribis? So the reason is, as we just explained, because v'ava pisha ein lazeh, because even if the seller himself doesn't have the product right now, so if he doesn't have the product, how could you view it already in the buyer's domain? But because yesh lazeh. Because another man in the market, since the market has already been established, he has the product, and therefore, right now, the seller could acquire it with the money that he got from the buyer, and since he could get it, and then if he gets it, we'd consider in the domain of the borrower, it just wasn't delivered, from the buyer, it just wasn't delivered to him yet, so if we really, for the rabbinic law, that's enough to alleviate the concerns for being like ribis. Continues the Mishnah, which is the corollary of this, of Yatzah Hashar, which is actually based on the halacha of Yeshloi. The Mishnah explains that halacha. Let's say Hayuhu Tchila LaKaitzrim. Let's say he was from the first ones to be reaping the fields for that season. Now, but although that the Shar has not been established, and we said that if the market value has not been established, you cannot do Pisuk, but here we have the other option. He has what's called Yeshloi. He has his own Gadish. He has his own pile of grain. So says the Mishnah, Paisik Imai, he could go ahead and whatever market value he wants to establish for the sale that he's making, he could go ahead and do this Pisuk, which is paying up front for the product coming later, Al HaGadish, from the pile of grain that he has. And the reason being is because since he has the product himself, again, the whole halacha of Yatzah Hashar was based on Yeshloi. It's actually like an artificial Yeshloi. Since even if he doesn't have, he can get from someone else. So we view it as if he has. So here, since he has, and actually that's part of all the cases the Mishnah is going to describe, where although it's not even finished yet, the product, but since it's already, and he has the basic ingredients, we view it as if he already has it. So then there's no more problem of ribis, because we view it as if right now, it was acquired to the buyer right now, even though he just didn't bring it, he didn't do mashiach, he didn't pull it and bring it to his domain. But since it's already there and he paid for it, we view it as if it's already his. And the reason being is because even when it's ein loy, even when the seller doesn't have the product, and let's say it's not Yatzah Hashar, at most this halacha of the problem of pisuk is a rabbinic isra of avak ribis. And therefore, when he has the product, so then, although really, essentially, it's not the buyer's, and therefore, maybe it should be the concern of ribis, since the whole thing is rabbinic, and he has yeshli, so Rabban said in that case, it's not going to be a problem about avak ribis. So therefore, if let's say it's regarding grain, so then you could go ahead and do this pisuk if he already has yeshli of the gadish. So too, vala avich al anov, the same thing applies to the vat of the grapes, which is this large vessel where they would gather all the grapes before they would step on it and press it out the wine. They would just sit there and weigh on each other and heat up and cook so that the wine will come out very well. That is already considered as if it's yeshloi, even though the wine's not there yet, but this is already as if that's enough of yeshloi. So too, vala matan shel zeisim, the vat of olives is called matan, whereas the vat of wine, of grapes, is called ovit. Same thing is that he could sell the oil, even though the oil is not even there yet, but since they're sitting in the vat, that's already considered yeshloi. And so too, vala beitzim shel yetzer, regarding the eggs of a potter, you could do pisuk with the potter on pots that he's going to sell him, with whatever shar he wants to, whatever market value he wants to, because even though it's not yatzah shar, but if he already put the dust, the earth, and he made it into these bowls, and which is what he makes the pots out of from this earth, that's already considered enough of yeshloi, and therefore you could do pisuk. So to Valasid, if let's say he was pasik with him for lime, he could do it mishashakoi bekivshin. If he already put the limestone and the wood inside the kiln to be burnt, that's already considered enough of a yeshloi to go ahead and do pisik with him. So to upaisiki mai alazevo koyimai sashana, the buyer could go ahead and pay up front for the animal dung for the whole entire year. That doesn't have to have any specific limitation times, because that's available at all times, because the animal will always excrete and it'll have fertilizer to sell him. Now Rabbi Yisrael, he disagrees. He says, no, in placing al zevel, you can't go ahead and do pisuk on the fertilizer, unless he had in his compost pile, he had fertilizer, because you need yeshloi. He disagrees with the Tanakama, who says that, no, it's always yeshloi, similar like the previous cases, given that it's not actually there, but it's almost finished. So to hear where the animal will always have, he disagrees. He says, no, you have to have the actual zevel. Whereas v'chacham matir macham, like the Tanakama, say, no, that it is permitted. Now the Mishnah continues, moreover, another halacha regarding this pisuk, upaisiki may bishar hagavaya. The consumer could go ahead and do pisuk with him regarding the, which literally means, say, the higher market value, which is that the consumer could tell the seller that if ultimately, meaning I'm paying for you up front right now, and a certain price that we're making up for it right now, whatever the market value is at this point in time. Now, but I want you, if by the time you deliver to me the product, the price goes down, I want you to give me that cheaper price. Now, again, the reason why we concern pisuk usually is problematic is because it actually might go up in that time period. Then when the seller is giving it at that higher price, essentially the money that he had for the last few months was like a loan, and then he's giving back for the higher one. That's what we say is usually the problem, and that's what is ameliorated with yatsashar or with yeshlei. Here we're saying the opposite, where the buyer wants the upper hand, not only if it goes up that he gets that, but he's saying if let's say it goes down, he wants to say then I'm going to take it at, you're going to have to give it to me at that lower price. Whereas Rashi explains that although the word used is shar hagavaya, it literally means the lower, cheaper price, because when you say it's the higher price, it means to say that the market value for, he's going to get more produce for less money. So the buyer could make that up with him, although he's paying him right now. And let's say it's $10 a bushel. He says, if by the time you give it to me, it's going to be $8 a bushel, I want you to give me more bushels for the money that I gave you, because I'm going to go based on that lower value. Yehuda, I mean, he says, no. Even if that when the buyer did the pisuk, he paid up front, he didn't make up for him that he's going to want the cheaper price if it goes down the price by the time it gets delivered, still, not like Tanakama says you have to verbalize it. Yehuda disagrees, says Yochel Loimer, the buyer could still tell the seller when he sees that at the time he's getting delivery that the price has already gone down. He could say, look, either tenli kazeh, give me now according to the cheaper price, or tenli esmoisai, or give me my money back because I don't want the more expensive price I paid you up front. Give me my money back. I'll go to other sellers and I'll get for the cheaper price that it's right now. Now the reason why he could do that is because, first of all, he never did meshich yet. He never acquired it when he paid up front. That's actually part of the problem why when it goes up in price, since he never did meshicha, it's not like his. We say that if it's yeshlei or yatsasha, then we'll say it's like his, but it's not like his, and therefore that we said that could be a problem for ribbis. So here the other way works in his favor, where he could retract, he could back out. Now, although generally when money has already changed hands, then there's a halacha that's called mishapara, where although the kinyan with meshicha didn't happen by the buyer, but he already gave the money, so then that would be the curse of Mishapara. Here in this case, he wouldn't even have the Mishapara, because since he only gave the money with the intention of receiving it not for now, but rather at a later point in time, and in that interim the value might change, generally the assumption is that when a person gives the money, it's to have the cheapest price or the market value that it's going to be. So he's paying up front, he's doing a favor to the seller, but not to create a loss for himself. And therefore, it's not even the Mishapara, it's not like that was the commitment and that he's backing out from his commitment. The commitment was understood that he's going to want to get for the cheaper price at the time of the delivery if it goes down, and therefore it's not even a problem according to Yehuda of the Mishapara. Now Gemara explains this halacha of our Mishnah of Pisuk. Amar Basi, Amar Biechen, he says, Ein Peiskin al Shar Shebeshuk. One is not allowed to go ahead and do Pisuk on the market value that's in the market, meaning that, like Rashi said on the Samach Gimel Mabez, that there's the market that gets established by the donkey drivers, who they bring the produce into the cities. They come with all the produce, everyone comes to the market. So that's not considered enough of a shar kavua. We said in the Mishnah, you can't do pisik, only the yatsa shar. Says Rabbi Yechanan, that's not yatsa shar, because the donkey drivers, they came into the city town, they're starting to sell in the shuk, that's not enough. Now, on that, Amar Reb Zeira Rabasi, so Reb Zeira asked Rabasi, who said over this teaching in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, says, Amar Reb Yechanan, did Rabbi Yechanan say this, afila kedurmas hazeh, even like this durmas, which is this huge and large market that's in the city center, even that's not going to be considered the established market value to have yatsa hashar? So Amalei, he said to him, loy Amar Reb Yechanan, no, Reb Yechanan only said that it's a problem of pisuk, ele b'shuk shela yaris. Only the markets in the cities, the Lekeviya Tarai, because their market is not a fully established market value. It still fluctuates. No, regarding what you're asking about this Durmas, the city center where everyone, all the merchants from all over come, yeah, that would, Rabbi Yechanan would agree, that would be considered Yatsa Shar, and therefore that would be allowed to do Pesach at that point in time. Now the Gemara asks, well, the man, the Salika Dait Mekar, now according to what we had originally entertained in the question, the Amr Rabbi Yechanan Felika Durmas Azeh, meaning, Reb Zeira, who was asking the question, it was entertaining to say that Reb Yechanan even said that it's a problem about Pisuk, and it's not considered that the Shar is Kavua, even like this Durmas, like this huge city center market. So Elamasnit in the Ketan, then the question then becomes, so then our Mishnah that taught that Ein Poiskin La Peiros, that you cannot do Pisuk on Peiros, Ad Sheyatzah Shar, until the market has been established. But like the Mishnah said, Yatzah Shar Poiskin, but if the market has already been established, it's already stabilized, we know what the value is, then you can do pisuk, because then it's considered like yeshloi, because even though he doesn't have, he can get from someone else, and therefore we consider like already by the buyer. So even though if it goes up, it's going up in the buyer's domain, not like this avak ribis, where he's getting back more than what he gave. So hechem mishkachas la, but then how are you going to find that case? What is the case of yatsa hashar, if even this durmis is considered loy yatsa hashar? So on that, the Gemara says, what the Havamina would have thought is that masnitin, the halacha of our Mishnah was bechite da achlave. It's regarding the wheat of when the homeowners and the storehouse, when the warehouse owners start opening up their warehouses, the arve, and when the ships bring in the river, they bring produce to sell, that the mashach tarit fe, that is a market that really stabilizes because it lasts for a long time. That is now is a huge influx. All the warehouses are open, all the ships are bringing. That's something where, in the Havamina, we would have thought that's what Yatsa Ashar. And that's what Rabbi was answering to him. He says, no, Rabbi Yochanan even said Yatsa Ashar is even with this Durmas. He was just saying that in a city, when the donkey drivers bring it, that's not considered enough of a stabilization for the price to be allowing Pisuk. But yeah, the Durmas, when the city center and everyone comes there, even without the warehouses and the ships coming, that would be considered Yatsa Ashar to allow Pisuk. Tarabon Lin the Braisa, continuing on these halachas of Pisuk, in Paiskin ala Peiros, one is not allowed to, again, prepay for produce that is going to get a delivery at a later point in time, again, for the problem of this Avak Ribis, Atshe Yatsa Ashar, like our Mishnah says, until the market has stabilized. Yatsa Ashar Paiskin, if the market has already stabilized, then you can do this Pisuk, because as we said in the Mishnah, Av Pishain Lezeh, Yesh Lezeh, even though he doesn't have, but someone else has. So again, then there's no problem, we review it already as if it's by the buyer. Now, continues the Braisa with different cases that have to be calculated regarding this halacha. Hayichadashis mi arba v'yishanis mi shalish. If, let's say, new grain was selling for 4 bushels for $1, and v'yishanis mi shalish, the old one was selling for only 3 bushels for $1. Now, the reason for that is because the old one is better to go ahead and create the flour out of. The new one, you have to wait, it's not as good, so therefore it's a cheaper price. Says the Braisa, ain paiskin. So you cannot do a pisik to purchase the new grain at 4 bushels $1, at sheyatza hashar l'chadish liyashin, until the market value has stabilized that the new one and the old one are selling for the same price. Now, the reason for this is because, as we said, the new grain is selling for 4 for $1 because it didn't dry up yet for all that's required. Now, if someone's going to do pisuk on the new grain, what is pisuk? You pay for it now and you get the delivery at a later point in time. So he's not getting the new grain now. He's going to get it at a later point in time when it already dried up all that's necessary. That's ribis. Because you're paying for something a cheaper price and you're getting it a more expensive product. You're getting a higher value than what you gave. And that means to say that the seller who got to use the money is giving you back more than what he got on his loan. So therefore, that's what the Brice is saying, is that you cannot do pisuk to receive the new grain for a price of, let's say, 4 saw for a selah, until it's been established that the value of 4 saw for a selah is equal for the old and for the new. Therefore, when he's getting at a later point in time, he's getting at his old, that's not going to be any different than the new that he bought, because they both have the same market value. And because or else, then you run into the problem of pisuk, where again, pisuk is only if it establishes that it's by the buyer, but if you're getting a different product, meaning a different market value, then that would run into the problem again of ribis. So too, ha'ilakutis mi'arba. If let's say the produce that was gathered through leket, what happens is that the poor people go and gather leket, shecha, pei, they go through all the fields and they gather the grain that's allotted for the poor people. So generally that's not such good grain. First of all, because also they gather it from many different fields and they mix together the grain of rye with the grain of wheat. It's all mixed together. So let's say the market value for those lakutois, for the gathered grains, are going for 4 saw for a seller. And from a regular person, meaning not from a poor person who gathered from myriads of fields, but rather just from a seller who sells his grain, it's going for a more expensive price of 3 saw for a seller. Says the Braisa, ain paiskin. So a person cannot do pisuk with a homeowner for 4 saw for the seller, achiyotz, meaning even if the homeowner wants to sell him the lakutais type. He cannot sell him the lakutais for 4 saw for a seller. Again, lakutis is this cheaper price. Achiyotza ashar, until the value of 4 saw seller has been established l'loiket ulamaycher. For a loiket, meaning for a poor person who usually has lakutis, and for a regular homeowner who is a seller, who he usually sells his products for 3 saw seller, but he also has available the lower quality stuff. He can't sell even the lakutis, which has the market value of 4 saw seller. He can't sell that market value of 4 saw for a seller until that his product is the same price as the product of the lakutas. Now, the reason for this halacha, the Gemara explains as follows. Rav Nachman, he says, paiskin lelakutas. You could do pisuk for the lakutas kishar halakutas. Meaning if the market value of lakutas, which has been established already, which is that it's the cheaper type of grain because it's just gathered a little bit here, a little bit there. So you could do pisuk on the lakutais. So on that, Amalei Rav Rav Nachman, Rav asked Rav Nachman as follows. He says, I don't understand. Maishna loikit, why is a loikit, a pauper who he gathered the grain, why is it any different where you say that he's allowed to sell right now on pisuk on the market value that's been established for lakutais? Because what's the halacha? And that's the halacha we explained in the Mishnah of what's called Yatza Ashar. The Ilesle, because even if he doesn't have any available lakutis himself, but Yazav Milokit Chavri, but he technically could borrow from his fellow pauper, who's also a laikit, from his mixed produce, and he'll be able to get it. So therefore, it's considered already like a Yeshloi, and it's already considered in the domain of the borrower. So therefore, there's no concern even if the market value goes up, because it's going up in the domain of the borrower. So that asks Rabbi Rav Nachman, Balabayis Nami, then the homeowner too, Yazav Milokit. He could also borrow from a loket. In other words, we're asking essentially in the halacha of this braisa, why did it say that a homeowner cannot sell the lakutais at the value of the lakutais? Why? What's the problem? If it's Yatsa Ashar, just like a loket himself, a pauper could sell it now for the price that it's been established. Because even if he doesn't have it, it's Yatsa Ashar, he can get it from another poor person. Then why does a homeowner have to wait till his regular produce, which is usually more expensive, till it goes down and it's the same value as the lakutais? But why? Why can't he just sell lakutais for lakutais value? It's already been established. Why does it have to be equal to his own produce? So Amalei, so on that Rav Nachman responded to Rav, he says, first of all, balabai is zila ben milsa lemeza milaket. You don't have the halachic principle of yatsa hashar in regards to the homeowner, on regards to this cheap produce of the lakut, because it's degrading for a homeowner to go to the poor people and say, oh, please, can you give me some because I owe a product to someone else? A homeowner's not going to do it. He's a plantation owner. He's not doing that. And therefore, you don't have the svara of Yatsa Ashar. One poor person will borrow from the other one. So therefore, you have that principle of im ein lai, yesh lai. But you don't have that with a homeowner. Or ibaisim, if you want, you could say a different reason. Man di yav zuzi labala bias, because somebody that gives money to a homeowner, to a regular seller, even if he's coming to buy the Lakutas. Apeiru Shapiru Yahav. He's giving it with the intention of getting higher quality produce. So therefore, you can't compare if he's going to go ahead and get it from the Lakutas. You don't have that principle. Now those some Mefarshim explain a little bit more complex in the sense of that it creates an element of Maris Ayin, where it would seem like that the Pisuk is being is at a cheaper price for a higher product because it gives the appearance of that he's giving it for this product, which is from the Balabais, which is actually more expensive, and yet he's only paying him for the cheaper price. So that's why it's problematic. You have to wait first until they equal out and stabilize that both markets are the same value, both that of the Lakutas and the Balabais, because if he's giving money of the Lakutas to the Balabais, which is a cheaper price, and he's going to get back a product, the assumption is that he's getting back the higher quality product, but he's doing it for the cheaper price, and it gives the appearance, why is that happening? Because he's letting the seller hold on to the money until he delivers a later point in time, which gives the appearance of ribbis, and therefore, because of that Maris Ayin, we can't compare the halachas of the Balabais to the Lakutas, and that's why the Braisa said, until they're both the same price, he can't sell it even if it's Yatza Hashar of the Lakutas. It has to be equal, both of the Lakutas and of the regular Balabais. Now, a related discussion, the Gemara brings, Amrav Sheshash Amrav Huna, he says, Ein Loivin al Shar Shebeshuk. A person cannot lend based on the market value that's in the market at that point in time. Now, there's two interpretations Rashi brings. What is this halacha that's being said over here? Rashi says that he heard, the interpretation is, that a person cannot borrow money through the format of a loan, an actual loan, on the condition that if I don't pay you up the money until that date, then I'm going to give you produce like the current market value that is right now. That's essentially like a pisuk, which is, I'm going to give you, I'm taking something, there's a money that's being transferred right now, and the produce is going to be delivered at a later point in time, but based on the market value right now. Now, and that's what the Chiddush word of Sheshesh was saying, is that although regards to Mekech HaMemcher, regarding business dealings, that's what we're describing in our Mishnah, that we said it's going to be permitted. And the reason why we said it's going to be permitted is because it was already Yatza HaShar. That's what Sheshesh is saying. But since here it's Loiven, it's through the format of a loan, that is always differentiates. That is always, as we said from the first mission in our Perek, where we said, Ezu Neshel Ezu Tarbis, we gave a biblical example, I gave a rabbinic example. Biblical is through a loan, borrowing, lending money. That is the biblical case. So we're more stringent in that case. So therefore, although, yes, in regards to a rabbinic format, which is through commerce, there we said that although it could be problematic about when if the market value goes up, it's going to give the it's going to look like ribbis, but we said that if it's Yatzar Shah that takes care of it, Yatzar Shah will only work for rabbinic ribbis, but not for an actual loan, because then what happens is, if the loan is now and he's going to give him the produce based on the value now, and if it goes up then he's going to be giving him back more than what he got, it's going to be like ribbis. Regarding a loan, we are stringent. It's only regarding commerce that we were lenient. That's one version Rashi has. Then he brings from the Bahag, from the Halachas Gedailas, that it's saying a different halacha. It's saying what's known as Sabisa. Sabisa is that if someone comes to, knocks on the other lady's house and says, could I borrow a cup of sugar? And then she says, I'll give you back a cup of sugar. So that halacha is that you cannot borrow a sa for a sa. Now, the reason for that is because then, possibly in the interim, until the lady gives it back, the price of sugar will go up. It's going to be considered a loan on ribbis because she's giving her back more than what she took. So what Rav Sheshesh is saying is, you cannot do a loan of saw b'saw on the reliance of the current market value to say, why would you think that would work? Because, as the Gemara mentions this concept, that since there's wheat in this place Hini, there's wheat in this place Shili, there's wheat all over the place, which is essentially what the concept of Yatzar Shar is, so then it should be similar to the aloha of the Mishnah later on of Ayin Heim and Aleph that says, I have it, meaning it is Yashloi, I just need my son to come or until I find the key. So that is what Rav Sheshesh is saying, that no, even though there's a market value that's established, you cannot do a loan of Sabisa. So that's the Bahag's interpretation. Then there's Rashi's interpretation for, again, it's regards to halachas of pisuk. But either way, the Gemara says as follows. Amalei Rav Yisib bar Chama l'Rav Sheshes. V'amrlo, and some say it was Rav Yisib bar Abba l'Rav Sheshes. Either way, someone asked Rav Sheshes, Umi am Rav Huna hachi? This that you said over this teaching in Rav Huna. Did Rav Huna really say this? But v'abayim in Rav Huna, they had asked Rav Huna the following question. Hanu b'nei bei Rav. Regarding these Talmudic scholars, these yeshiva boys,
The Yasvi B'Tishrei. What they do is as follows. They borrow money in the beginning of this month. In Tishrei, they borrow money. Upari, and they pay back when their mother sends their packages in the mail. They get all these produce. They get all these stuff. They pay back B'Teves. They pay back in Teves. Now, they pay back according to how much the market value was at the time that they took the loan, which was in Tishrei. And the problem is, the produce might have gone up in the interim, which is essentially the same type of case that Rav Huna was describing before. Now, Rashi says that's according to his interpretation. According to the interpretation of the Bahag, actually what they were doing is that they were borrowing wheat, not money, wheat in Tishrei, and then they were paying back wheat in Teves, which is essentially that case of Sub B'Sub. So they had asked Rav Huna, Shari Ayasir, is that permitted or forbidden? Again, either, which is exactly this case, again, according to either interpretation Rashi, either it was a sub-assal case, or it was this pisuk that was being done, b'derech alva. Amaluhu, so Rav Huna said to them, look, hachiti b'hini, at this time in Tishrei, there's wheat in Hini, v'hachiti b'shili, there's wheat in Shili, meaning these were places which were near Pumbedisa, which is where the story took place. He says, ibai, if they wanted, zavni uparile, he can go ahead and pay him back. In other words, it's something that's available right now, and therefore he said that there's no problem about doing this. So either way, ask the Gemara, how could you say his name Rav Huna, that you cannot be love al shar b'shabeshog, whether it means sub b'sal, whether it means doing the pisuk, when there was exactly that same incident that Rav Huna said that it's not a problem because essentially that's what's called yatsa shar, it's yatsa shar, and therefore it's considered yeshloi, and therefore it's already considered in the domain of the other party, and therefore there's no problem if it went up in that interim. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Mi'ikara sav Rav Huna ein lovin. Originally, Rav Huna, as Rav Sheshe has quoted before, held that you're not allowed to borrow. But, and again, either because of sav b'sa or because it's pisuk and it's through a way of halva, and then we won't give it the leniencies, as we said regarding Mekir Memchor of pisuk, which if you have yeshloi or yotzah shar. But kibin neshama lahad the amr b'shmo barchiya amr b'lazer, that lovin that he heard that someone else had said that you could borrow, then amr ihu namir lovin, that was the other incident that you heard that he told that the yeshiva students were allowed to do that. He said that you could borrow again because, although that it's through a derech halva, but since it's already yatsa shar, then we really view it as if it's already there, it's already available, it's already considered in the other party's domain, and therefore there's no problem even if it goes up in the interim that he could pay him back the value that originally was, because we really view it as if it's already back to the person that he owes it to, and therefore even if it went up in his domain, and therefore there's no problem about Ribbis.